Hey guys, welcome to Generation Dry. I'm Kayla.
And I'm Leah. Let's jump in.
So I think you saw this, Kayla, but I saw this article on Psychology Today or this blog post. I saw it multiple places. So I saw it on Twitter first, and then I saw people repost it on Instagram. So it kind of, I'm assuming it's been circulating. It's getting a lot of hits because of the topic, and it's called The Rise of Lonely Single Men.
Such clickbait.
I know that. Well, obviously, like, right? Like it's, I clearly stopped on it. But the focus of this article is that there are more single men than women, and men are having a difficult time finding themselves in relationships, really because women are, we'll go deeper into this, but essentially women are having higher standards and maintaining those standards and expecting more from men is pretty much what it says. So I really thought this was an important thing to talk about because I think in the year 2022, and not just in romantic relationships and not just with women, but we're really becoming more intentional with our relationships and being more, we're setting the bar high. And I think it's a good thing, but I think it's important for our mental health, for like recovery. It's important just to have these high standards because then we're really saying nobody can fuck with me in my inner peace.
Absolutely. I love the first sentence of this. Younger and middle-aged men are the loneliest they've ever been in generations, and it's probably going to get worse. Boo-hoo. I'm just like in my men-hating phase. Don't mind my bias, but it's totally true if you think about it. I mean, look at, you know, the early 1900s compared to now. I mean, just the Mad Men age, the Gatsby age, all that. Men didn't have to worry about having a partner. It was kind of an obligation
pick
for women, right?
Yeah. Men had their pick. They had their wife and their girlfriend and their mistress.
Mm-hmm. And also the standard too, it's like when I was reading it and then now I'm like looking back over it, it's like men have become a large portion of a growing group of long-term single people. Like that doesn't surprise me at all.
Mm-hmm.
Being back in the dating world and being single again, I really noticed, and even back when I was single before my last relationship, and I think it also depends where you are geographically. Like I think bigger cities tend to have more of this problem. Like I was in LA, obviously, like you're in Diego, like this is going to attract more people who are not necessarily looking for something long-term or something serious. But in general, I think this article really kind of hits a really important topic, which to your point, women, and I think not just women, men too, like anybody who dates men are starting to realize, you know, we don't have to conform anymore to this old school ideology of what a good partner, a good wife, you know, looks like. We don't have to lower our expectations and lower our core values and our priorities to fit into the box of what you know, the standard kind of housewife. When I think of it, I think of like Betty Draper from like Mad Men, right? Where you're like fucking miserable and like, you know, having all these like mental health issues. And then like your husband is literally talking to the fucking, you know, therapist behind her back. Just like checking in on her. And like, can you imagine? And we're in 2022 where people are finally realizing this does not have to be the standard.
No. And I think with women having, mostly equal rights, right? Like being in this country, like women, it's more equitable right now. Women have more opportunities. Women are having careers and deciding they don't want families. And so essentially it's like, I don't need, cause you know, there was, yeah, it was like the man was a provider for all the resources, financial, you needed the person to take care of you and your kid, that protection. It was very like, traditional roles. And now that doesn't necessarily need to exist, not exist, but like you need a partner, but a lot of it's like, we're going to co-parent together. Like we're going to build a life together. We're going to build a house together. We're going to both contribute to finances. So there's no need for men anymore in the same way. You want a relationship, you want a partnership. And of course this is very cisgender heteronormative. I want to like throw that out there, definitely. But I think it just reflects the kind of culture right now that we're in. And women are just like, I don't need anyone really. So I'm going to be very selective with who I let in my life. And I think that's great. Like that's how I've been living my life. I'm like, I'm not going to get married for the sake of getting married. I could have done that. Yes, and yes. There are a lot of great people out there, but I'm not going to just commit to one person just for the sake of it. Cause I don't need to.
No. And I think it goes back to, right, like Cher's very famous quote, you know, I don't need a rich man. I am a rich man. And not to say I have Cher money yet, I'm manifesting it, but you're 100% right. We're getting to a place where women are having more equal rights and higher pay. And we're just not expected anymore to just, you know, come out of high school or, you know, pop out a baby right away and get married really young. And like, that's your life. And once again, if that's what you want, there's nothing wrong with that. But I think the problem that we had before was that was really kind of the only option. And any woman who didn't want that was like, you know, feminazi, like hate to use that word, but that's kind of like, right. Like, well, you're a bitch or you're a lesbian or something's wrong with you because you don't want to settle down and become a housewife and have,
right.
And make dinner every night. Like that would literally thinking about that makes me like, I wouldn't, there's no way I could be sober.
Absolutely. Well, I think, but you see like, what is it? Mad Men, like you see Betty Draper, like drink, right. You see all of these housewives, like drink excessively and take sleeping pills and are just like really trying to like numb themselves out because there was like no control. And so it's like, in order to survive or like get through the day and these responsibilities and this box that they were confined in, they were just drinking. And I mean, that was very true. Like it was normalized, like chain smoking cigarettes, like all of that was very.
Yeah. What do they have that song? Mommy's Little Helper. It's really true. And it's really fucked up. Like, I think it was like talking about Valium, mm-hmm. But I think anytime you put anybody in a box and you say, hey, this is going to be your life. You don't really have that many other options. Cause this goes to so many things, right? Like this goes to like the organized religion that you might come from. Like I was talking mm-hmm. to a friend who had left Mormonism, right? Mm-hmm. And that's like a huge religion that has a lot of restrictions. Yeah. Or for me, when I was in a 12-step program, which once again, 12 steps look a lot different today than they did, you know, 6 years ago. But when you're told you have to live a certain way, it can really restrict you as a person and you can lose your identity or I think you can form an identity that isn't really true to yourself. And then you get lost. And when you're not able to really pursue the things that you might want to pursue, like I think about all of those housewives in the, you know, 50s and like, mm-hmm. what were they passionate about? What do they really want to do? Right. Like, did they like writing? Did they love reading? You know, did they dream? What did they dream about? And how did they get through that? And like,
you're they sold Tupperware.
Exactly. Oh my God. But totally. Like, I can't even imagine. And I'm so happy that we live now. And if reincarnation exists, then I'm glad I don't remember. before, because that just sounds so awful. And, I'm sorry for men if they're lonely right now, but you know what? It's fucking lonely being told what you have to do and being put into a fucking box. And even for me, like I was in a really controlling, abusive relationship where it wasn't to the extreme, thankfully, because we weren't married. But like he told me what I needed to wear. I would go out shopping and he'd be like, you can't you can't buy that. Like, you're not going to wear that. Or if you are, like, you have to wear it with me. And so, like, I got bits and tastes of what it was like to kind of be in that kind of relationship. And it was absolutely fucking miserable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think the thing is, and I want to like also go back, like if you want to be, you know, a stay-at-home mom, there's nothing wrong with that. But the thing is it needs to be mutually negotiated. Like, we both need to say, this is what we want. This is like, these values overlap. I think that's the key too, is that, and he talks about in the article, this, what's his name? I should probably look at his name, give him credit where credit's due. Where is it? Greg Matos, he's a psychologist, but he was saying that like men need to also recognize that values are important to women. Like, shared values are important. So it's like one of those things, again, like you can want to be, have this very traditional family dynamic, but it's something both people have to want in order to be happy and to feel like they're being respected. So it's like, it's again, like, and I have women that's what they want. And as clients that's what they want. And there's no problem with that, but it's like, are you being respected? And then again, sometimes the thing is in those dynamics, it can be really controlling, because then the partner can, you know, give them an allowance or restrict them on what they can and cannot buy. And it's one of those things where it can become really sticky. So it's, I think regardless of the dynamic and the roles, it has to be both mutually agreed upon. Both parties are like consenting to it, essentially. Yeah. Like, this is what I want out of a marriage or a partnership. And like, you know, and the same thing with like, you know, the like, what is it? Like dom communities, right? Like, it's like the dom, like you agree on, you consent to it. And that's exactly. a totally different thing. Yeah. So I think what also they're saying is like, these women are setting boundaries and men are frustrated because women are maintaining the boundaries. And I think it's just, and I do think there's kind of like this sad boy, like, girls are too picky. Like, it's like, no, girls are just, these women are just like, we're not taking this anymore. We're not second, you know, like second class citizens. We each bring something to the table.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think we bring more, just saying like, we give birth, like, what do you do? But any man listening to this, thank you for listening. Please don't subscribe. But
this could be helpful for a man listening, because this is where the culture is. Like, this is where women are like changing things up. There's a shift. The expectations are higher, and not in a bad way. People want to be respected and they want to feel like they can trust their partners, just like any other human wants to be respected. So like, men, non-binary individuals, everyone wants to be treated with respect and kindness and have an honest and open relationship. That's pretty common. Like, that's not unusual. And so I think it's just like you are entitled to that, women are also entitled to that.
And I think, you know, we all have to learn together as a generation, like Gen X, millennials. I think Gen Z kind of probably is better at it than we are. But, totally. You know, we still grew up with Disney films and this idea that like, a man's going to save me and, you know, I'm going to be a princess and life's going to be so great. And also the expectation, I think, on our end too, like, this guy's going to come on a white horse and he's going to be so perfect and just everything I'm looking for. And like, there are so many amazing, great guys out there. I've dated a ton, but we all have our character defects and we all have our, you know, our baggage, so to speak. And I think on both ends, people are being too picky. Like, there's a level, right? The swing of the pendulum. And like, I've got some friends who, you know, we're all in like our early 30s. And so a lot of us are looking for that person, you know, and we're ready to settle down. But I've had some friends where literally I had a girlfriend go on a date and the guy basically told her like, yeah, I had a really great time, but I just didn't feel that like spark. I didn't feel those, you know, butterflies and the, you know, fireworks. So just, you know, let's move on. I'm like, the fuck? Like, is this a Disney movie? Like, is this a rom-com? Like, where, you know, you're not going to go on a second date with somebody that you enjoyed and that you found attractive and that all this other stuff because you didn't feel butterflies. Like, I'm trying to think, like, half of my relationships did not involve that. Like, half of them, to be fair, like, were my friends first, which I think make the best relationships when you have some kind of rapport with them beforehand.
Yeah.
But also this expectation on both ends. And I was reading this other article, which was basically saying the flip side of this is that at least, you know, back in the 40s, 50s, that era, people had roles, right? So yes, I'm sure that there were exceptions, but for the most part, you know, you married your husband, maybe you met him through friends, maybe it was like, you know, some sort of, you know, hook up with your parents, whatever. And not to say that there wasn't love or romance, like, you know, both my grandparents were married for a super long time. And now everybody's getting divorced all the time just because, like, oh, I don't like the way that they're socks smell.
It's a
don't know.
Right. So there's like you have to find that balance of these are my values and these are the things I'm not willing to compromise on, or absolutely, these are my non-negotiables. And then there are some things where it's like, yeah, well, nobody's perfect. So if you're looking for like this person to have zero flaws, like, newsflash, you don't have zero flaws.
Yeah,
like
you don't have that. So
yeah. So I think that's like, it is, it's a balance of like being like, okay, like what are the things that are most significant and like that I need, like not want, but need. And then the things that are like, okay, like I always say, this is an example, but like height, right? Like where women are so fixated on height.
6 foot, please.
Yeah. Right. And it's like,
you're 5'1", chill.
Exactly. I don't know. And so it's like one of those things where it's like, wait, if everything you're attracted to them, everything is like, will stay perfect or close to perfect, or just like they're checking off all those, like those very important criteria that you've been like, this is what I need in a partner, but maybe they're under the height criteria. Like there's something to be said about, it's one thing if you're not attracted at all. Right. But another thing, if you're just like writing someone off for a what's it called? Like a physical characteristic or like, I just think that. And I think partially though, and the guy talks about it on a little bit about the dating apps, where it's, I think we're in this world, and not just dating apps and other forms, where we are seeing all of our options all the time. There's always this idea that there's something better out there, or there could be something out there that's better or greater or a better fit. And so I think too, it's really just like, say you had this amazing date and this person just like whatever, for some, whatever reason, whether it's height or whatnot, like the job isn't exactly what you would hope for in a partner. It's like, okay. So then people are like, well, there's like thousands of other people on the dating apps that are available. So then I think it's hard because it's this kind of idea. We have endless options and there's always something that could be better. And I think the thing is, it's hard to be mindful and intentional when we're always thinking about the what ifs. And that's our culture right now too, is like regret, what ifs, what if there's more, what if I could do something differently? And then you get caught up in that mindset. And then I think a lot of people are quick to end a relationship or write someone off because of those, like all the what ifs, and not really paying attention to how they're feeling with this person right in front of them.
Oh yeah. I forget what they, and funny enough, I was listening, I love Hidden Brain, like shout out Hidden Brain. It's another podcast from NPR. But he had a guest on, Aziz Ansari, who's like a comedian, like totally random guest, but actually extremely super intelligent human. I'm pretty sure he wrote a book, but they were talking about this topic. And I forget if this is the exact wording, but he basically called it like the lottery effect, which is that our generation basically treats dating like a slot machine, and you go right and then you hit something and you're like, wow, okay, I'm a winner, like that's great. So like, right, you meet somebody, they check off, you know, let's say they check off 6 out of your 10 boxes or whatever, and so they have some character defects, or you know, maybe they said they were 6 foot and they're like 5'10", right? Or like, and vice versa, right? Like she said that she's like a natural blonde and she's like clearly not, or you know, who cares, whatever, like yeah. Maybe she used a little bit of filtering in her photos.
Right.
That's not a write-off to me, right? And so, but the idea with this lottery effect is to exactly to your point, we meet somebody that is good, maybe even great, and we keep going and we look and we try and hit higher. So we keep going back to the slot machine going, maybe I can win bigger. Maybe I can hit all 10, like newsflash. You're probably never going to meet somebody who hits all 10 of your boxes who also doesn't hit. And I repeat this because I think it's a great exercise to do that my therapist had me do, which is create. I did this before. And then when I broke up with my last relationship, did this again. Because I think things change too as you get older. But I made a 3-column list, which was things that I'm really looking for in a partner, which was the first column, things that I'll tolerate in a partner, right? These are not deal breakers, but it's okay to obviously, like right. we said, you're going to have things. There are things about myself that I don't like, you right. know, like that I could put on a list for myself. And then you right. have your non-negotiables deal breaker list. And then you look for that stuff and like fucking put that piece of paper in your wallet and go in the bathroom and like double check it. Okay. But like, you're not.
Yeah.
Just.
You but know, I think
we think we're going to find this person who's, and to say like, if they have, and I think it's tricky, if they have a, maybe one non-negotiable, maybe. Okay. You know. But if they have like 3 or 4, like, nah, like, bye, you know, start over. But if the list of things you can tolerate is, you know, maybe you have 4 things, but then they have like 8 or 9 things on your things that you're looking for. Like, that's a great start. Okay. Because you learn when you love somebody, you learn to love the things about them that yeah. you don't necessarily like. And things also become more tolerable, I think, as we age and just as you get to know somebody better. And also things like you can change. Like with my ex, I hated that he never, like when his apartment hit was so super messy and he never put his laundry away. Mm-hmm. And then he would do like 7 loads and it killed me. But then when we moved in together, it was kind of a compromise of like, if we're gonna live in this house together, you need to put the stuff in the hamper. I'll do the laundry. I don't mind because you do it wrong anyways, but you know, I need you to
there needs to be some organization.
Exactly. And then it went away. And then this thing that used to be on this tolerance list was no longer even there. So like things can change
yeah. as
well. And I think people forget that.
So if people aren't aware, our listeners, I have it. And so I'm going to plug my dating ebook, Dating Made Easy, because I have that. I have a bunch of exercises on there about how to date intentionally, but Kayla, it's very similar. Like I have one exercise. It's like identify your personal values, identify the values that you need in a relationship, and then the qualities you want in a partner, and then the non-negotiables. And you kind of look at how those all overlap, right? Like, and I think the thing is we, and this is not just women, this is everyone, every individual I think tends to try to mold whoever they're seeing or dating or with into like the list they already have, or change it and be like, they'll have their list and they'll have their check boxes. And they're like, okay, like, so maybe, so they say they're not really sure about marriage. Like I want marriage, but like, they're not sure, but like, that's fine. Like they're committed to me. And then they're like, we'll try to like manipulate our lists to fit this person versus work to find the person that can meet these specifications in our list. And again, not everyone's going to be perfect. Like nobody's going to bat a 10, like, right. Like that batting average is not going to be 100%.
They're going to put you in their trunk. So run away.
That's a good
thing. Like life.
No. So that's a good point. And that's like a sign to, yeah, the narcissist or sociopath is if they try to say they have all the things, or they try to like mirror exactly all the things you do, all the things you like, that is a red flag, a huge red flag. So, but I think we try to like, oftentimes kind of like, it's part of our denial. We want to like make it work. I think too, like when you're feeling lonely, as we talked about loneliness, you want connection and you want to make something work because you don't want to be lonely anymore. So we often get into the habit of really like manipulating these lists or like denying that we had these preferences or being like, you know, minimizing our needs. And the thing is our needs are important. And we should always honor them. But I think, so it's a balance. It's a balance of like honoring your needs, but also like being intentional and knowing there's not one perfect human out there. So if you're waiting for that person to show up on your doorstep, it's not going to happen. I started watching, and I never finished the first season. Did you watch Indian Matchmaking?
Yes, I did.
It's back. And I really liked Seema's, she's a matchmaker. Her like, she pretty much said like, you can get 60 to 70% of your list. Like you cannot expect 100% of your criteria. Nobody can. Like 60 to 70% is reasonable. And yeah. It's funny because like, there are these people that are like very specific. They're like must be self-made, preferably a doctor, this person, like all of these things that it's like, I want them to speak this language and I want them to have this religion. And I want, and a lot of the time the preferences or the criteria is for, they're like, well, it just would be nice if they spoke this language for my family, but you can also tell it's not part of their necessarily value system. They're just like, so they have like this, like, you know, laundry list of criteria and they're like, I want them to have all these qualities. And she's like, okay, you get 60 to 70%. And she's just really like cut and dry with that. And I love it. I'm like, good for you. Like, we need to be more realistic.
I kind of like want a matchmaker. I actually had a friend who did one.
They're
expensive.
I think I'd actually be really good at it.
They're fucking, do it. Can I be your first client?
I think I'd be really good. And, you know, I feel like, okay, another part he talks about in this article is the skills, like developing skills. I think I could help both men and women develop skills. I had to fine tune my own skills because when I was dating in my 20s, I was so reckless as far as like, I dated haphazardly. I talk about this in my ebook too. Like I had no, like basically no strategy except for like, are they hot and do I get like butterflies?
Totally.
And that was it. And then like, of course, nothing ever worked out. And then I would like turn away the nice guys. It was awful. But like, it's a skill. You need to develop those skills. So I would definitely take on that role. I would love that. Like,
okay. You heard it here, guys. Leah has agreed to be my
started manager. A new business. Yeah. Sign up. But I mean, I think just even teaching the skills of like, this is like, I recently, I don't know, Kale, if I told you this, I had this and all. So I'm dating, like not super active, but here and there.
Yeah.
This guy recently I had matched with on an app had, we had matched before like years ago. I see the same people cycle. I'm there too. Right. I can't, no judgment. It's just
yeah.
This one person I matched with is a few weeks ago and I had COVID once again. So I was like not actively on the dating apps and I didn't respond until a couple days later. And his response, he said like, hey Leah, like happy something like Thursday, like how's it going? I responded like that Sunday or Monday or something. And he goes, oh, and I said like, sorry, like how's it going? Hope you had a good weekend. He goes, weekend was good. I'm hearing from you like 3 days late though. Or like, he's like, way to text me back 3 days later. And it was like snarky. And I was like, unmatched. Cause like that was unnecessary. We aren't in a relationship. So like when we talk about skills, not just for men, but all of us, like look at your approach. Like it's like, how much are you expecting from people you haven't met? Like, it's not fair if you expect people to like, you know, commit to you. And I don't know. I think there's a lot of skills to be learned in this dating world and just in your relationships, including friendships. Like, I think we have to be realistic in people having lives and having responsibilities. And I think sometimes too, and I'm seeing this also with the younger like adults and teens that they have low distrust tolerance for not getting text back. And
I'm that way too.
One of my good friends, he's a radio host and he gets pissed when I don't respond within like 2 hours. And I'm like a therapist. I'm in session. I'm not
I have a job.
But there's like, so I think again, this is culture of like, we lack patience and then we get really like anxious and stressed out and then we get pissed and it's like this flurry of emotions that we can't regulate or that a lot of people cannot regulate. And then it becomes like, you hate me or they're not interested. And then you're a bad friend and it's snowballs. So I think too, we just need to learn how to be more patient and mindful and aware of our friends and our partners and just people having lives and responsibilities and them not being available has nothing to do with us.
No, and I don't know. I mean, what would you call that? Would it be like a lack of confidence? Is it a codependency thing? Is an anxiety thing? Because for me, one thing one of my not my current therapist, but a past therapist pointed out was, and this was also during COVID, which I feel like had an amplified effect for all of us that have mental health disorders. But my OCD got really, really bad. And when things started to kind of open up again, my partner at the time would go out, and I wasn't ready for multiple reasons. But I would get anxious, and then I would text him and like expect a response right away. And then he wouldn't answer, and I get super anxious. And then I'd end up calling him like a bajillion times. And then he'd finally answer, but he'd be mad. And then, but it would, re I'd feel relieved. I wouldn't even care that he was mad. But then, yet, I'm kind of, starting this conflict over really nothing. I forget what she called it, but it was basically, my compulsive need maybe to, make myself feel less anxious. And I had associated him answering with that's going to make me feel better. And so I wasn't worried about like, hey, let me just call him 30 times when he's out with his friends. Like, I don't care. He'll answer eventually and be like, what? Like nothing. I just was like feeling really anxious and just wanted to know you were like alive. Kayla, I'm fucking fine. Like, and I think we do that. Like,
Well, it's anxious attachment. I think there's some code of, I mean, I think it could be a slew of things, but it could be anxious attachment, codependent, especially if after, like when you're, I think a lot of people during the pandemic, especially if they were living with their partners, were so accustomed to their partner being there all the time and like seeing them all the time and like knowing their whereabouts, right? Because we were all sequestered to our own homes and like you couldn't leave and you really had to be with that person all the time or like,
yes, it was
so.
like limb.
Yeah, right. So like I think too that led to a lot of anxiety when you had to start living independent lives or like you start like having that, I don't know, your independent friendships and experiences outside of the relationship. It became like a little bit hard for a lot of people, I think, to cope with. I had a couple of friends that said that and they were like, I don't like this dependence that I've formed now with this person because I didn't have it before. But I think the pandemic, especially it brought up a lot of existential stuff.
Yes.
Like fear of death, fear of losing loved ones, because it happened to a lot of people. Like it was just like, so I think there was just this incredible fear when this person wasn't physically with you that they were gone from your life forever, even if it did, they just went to like the grocery store to
Oh
pick
yeah,
up.
no. I know a lot of people whose relationships ended right at the end or after COVID, including my own. And I think the way that I kind of see it is like we kind of got a raw deal. Like I know I started dating my partner right before COVID happened and everything happened so quickly. And it's like not only are you dating somebody new, or I think regardless, like of where you're at in your relationship, unless maybe you've been married a long time, like all of a sudden, like you said, everything is amplified. Everything is like you thought that you had no space or privacy before, like think a fucking again. Like, and for me, and I've even talked to my ex about it, where it's like, did we actually get the chance that I feel like we should have had? Because for me, somebody with mental health issues, COVID exacerbated everything. It exacerbated my once gone agoraphobia that came back. For anybody who is unfamiliar with the terminology, it is when, for me, it's because of my panic disorder, but I really didn't want to leave the house. And I think for a long time it was validated because we were told not to leave the house. And then it amplified my general anxiety. Obviously, it amplified my social anxiety when things did start to open. I was like, fuck no, I haven't gotten it yet. I'm not going to get it now. And it really put a strain on the relationship because I was one of those people where I was just like, how long have you been gone? Like, well, where are you going? Or, we say, hey, yeah, we're going to go over to friends for game night. Like literally people who lived in our complex. And I would back out at the last minute because I'd be like, I don't know, like, you know, maybe they haven't been like super careful like we have with COVID, or like, you know, what if I have a panic attack and, you know, like you're going to be there, but you're going to be drinking. So like, you know, and it really put a strain on the relationship. And I think a lot of people, you know, there's just no way to prepare for a pandemic. Like,
no way.
I still can't even believe it. I mean, not that it's over, you know, but
right.
I still can't believe it happened. Like, it just absolutely insane. But another thing, going back to the original article we were talking about with the standards, I think changing, one of the things he says is like, especially for women, because there are so many more single men, we have more options. So we can be more selective. Whereas once again, comparing that to like the olden days or whatever, that wasn't necessarily the case. Or we weren't allowed to choose, right? It was like your parents choose for you, or you're set up by somebody. This was the expectation. Or like, I think in other cultures too, like, you know, you can't date or marry outside of your like status, or, you know, back to like Indian matchmaking, you know,
religion.
Yeah. You have to stay within your religion, or you have to stay within your, God, what's the word I'm looking for? Your caste system. That's what it is.
Yeah.
And yeah. I know it's not as much that way in Western culture, but it is in a way, because, you know, I have a girlfriend who has a lot of money. She comes from a lot of money, and it's really, really difficult for her to date. And I'm very like, any guy that dates her, I'm like totally suspect of, because I'm just like, well, do they really like her, or do they like the fact that like she's gonna inherit a shit ton of money when she gets married, you yeah. know? Or, and it's also hard to find other people who are like billionaires or billion, I don't know what a, you know, a guy version of that would be. So it's like, I can't even imagine, you know, sometimes like for me in college, like, and now I cringe and it's like not something that I'm like proud of, like, but I did Playboy.
Oh, you did?
I did. Oh. I worked for them actually a good amount. And this was also, you know, Hugh Hefner was like super fucking old, so he wasn't really in the picture. But I did watch that Playboy documentary, which was fucking disturbing and yeah. obviously not surprising at all. But
did you read Holly Madison's book?
Yes. Yes. Oh my God. I read that right when it came out, and it was really hard, 'cause I used to love, Girls Next Door. Yeah. Like, and
the behind the scenes, and it was awful.
I know. And I still, and up until I watched the documentary, I would still watch it. Like, I bought all the seasons on Amazon, because it's just nostalgic, you know, something about it. It's stupid. It's fucking like, it's OG reality TV. So it's actually right. scripted and just, you know, whatever. But my point was, like, I remember, because I don't know if they do it now, but at the time they did, like, every year they would do like a college issue. So they go to all the different colleges, and, you know, you'd audition or whatever, and they'd pick girls. And so ours was like Girls of the ACC, because I went to Virginia Tech, mm-hmm. and I got picked as one of the girls. And so, and it was a super cool experience. I was still modeling at the time, but I remember I was seeing this guy, and then he was at a party, and I guess one of my friends was there or whatever. And I don't know if they were talking or if he overheard him talking to somebody else, but he was like, yeah, you know, like and it was like crude, right? It was like, yeah, like I'm fucking like the Playboy girl. And it's like, cool. So like, do you even like me? Ugh. Or are you just dating me because you yeah. can say that, right? And I think that happens a lot, like with, if you come from money, or, yeah. you know, if just, there's so many things that make it really difficult. And I think men have that problem too, maybe more than women, where it's like, at least I think where we live, it's like, are they dating me because yeah. I have a lot of money? And the answer is probably yes.
yeah.
Like, just being real, like Orange County, San Diego, like, you know, there's a lot of
Well, I'm a social worker, so I don't have to worry. Oh, wait, you mean like for men, if women are doing that? Is that what you're saying?
Like,
I was like, nobody's dating me for my money.
Yeah. Well, you never know, girl. You could become.
Yeah.
Want to watch out, but.
Right. But I mean, you know, I hear what you're saying. Right. And I do think that's on people. That's still on people's like lists of is like, you know, financial, not just ability, but like being well off and having those luxuries is like on people's checklist. And then I think, I mean, I don't know if you, I don't know if I don't think I may have told, I don't know if I told you this. There was a, I commented on a, this is like, I never do this on Instagram. I commented on this, like, it was some like meme account where it was like a proposal in Paris. And it was like this, it was like this boat. And then you see the Eiffel Tower way back. And it was like, will you marry me? It was like in lights. And it was like very extravagant. And like the caption on the meme was, or like on like by the video was like goals, like relationship goals. And I just being like my, you know,
you're like troll time.
Well, I just was like, I'm like my like little social justice warrior over here. I was like, I pretty much wrote like, I said something like, this is great, but like, do relationships have to be this extravagant? Cause now we're like looking at things like The Bachelor and The Bachelorette franchise. And like, It really like gives us this message that the proposals have to be extreme and like the ring has to be this size. And the thing is, it doesn't like, those things won't sustain over time. Right. Like when it comes down to it, it's like, how strong is a relationship? How similar in values are you and your partner? And I got, people were pissed. A lot of people liked it, but a lot of people were pissed. They were like, hater. And she's calling her, she's a therapist. And like, and it was funny because I was like, just kind of like a social commentary. I was just like, why? I'm like, this is, there's no hate on this proposal, but why is everyone saying this is goals? Like, cause this is going to be unattainable for most people. Like, and so why are we setting the standard that my partner needs to do this to propose? When it really should come down to like, are they trustworthy? Can they commit? And I think too, social media creates this weird version of relationships that people think they need to have. And then it's like about really just the image and like the visual of the relationship and what, you know, how, like, and it's really convoluted, honestly, and it grosses me out, but I got a lot of pushback for that. And it's funny because it really, I felt like I wasn't even criticizing the proposal. I was just like, why are we like all like, saying this is what I want, like, yeah, goals, like, I don't know. I just was like, I wanted to be like, well, when you come to me for couples counseling.
Yeah. Like,
I didn't say
here's my email.
Yeah.
It's true though. But, and I think when you're in a healthy relationship or a companionship and you can talk about those kind of things, because once again, right, like maybe that's on your list of like, something you've always dreamed of and you really want this kind of big proposal, but, and that goes down to like communication and,
right,
you know, how much money does your partner make? Is this realistic? And once again, going back to standards, right? Like, are you really going to be disappointed if they, you know, take you to this beautiful restaurant and, you know, all this stuff and there's no goddamn fucking hot balloon, like, you know, that's really going to ruin your moment. And
no Eiffel Tower.
Right. What's your point? And what I was thinking too, somebody once sent me this proposal and I thought it was really cute, but it was like this guy and he's a pilot. So he's like in his like mini pilot, which like you could never fucking get me in a small plane. So like bad chance. But he pretended to be crashing. Which is like the most fucked up. Like, I'm just sitting here thinking, this poor woman, if I were her, I'd be like, give me my clonopin. Like, oh my God, we're going down. But anyways,
that's terrible.
He has her get out the manual. And like, then the manual has all this cute stuff. And at the end, it says, like, will you marry me? And then, of course, by that time, she's like, but she, it's just, anyways, I have to find it and send it to you. It's
that's hilarious. Awful. But this, awful. Don't you think this also reminds you of like that whole thing where like in The Bachelorette, they're like, we're moving mountains together by climbing up this mountain and like, whatever. What is it called when you're like, they're like rock climbing, you know, when they're doing these like
ridiculous
stunts and then they have that adrenaline rush. And so then it feels like love. That's also something.
Exactly.
But I mean, granted, this maybe this woman who got proposed to that way thought it was cute, but like that would honestly.
Oh my God, no, it was terrifying. But I just, her reaction, like she was so mad, but then so happy at the same time. But my point my point, and I think it speaks to part of what you were saying too, is like, why did this need to be filmed? Like, this is supposed to be like an intimate moment, you know, like between you and your partner. And now, like, it bothers the fuck out of me when I'm like watching these videos of like weddings, and then it's like literally everyone's just like phones up, like, oh, everybody's like, I love when people are like, no phones allowed. Yeah. In the here, you have to put your phone away. Like, I'm not trying to have a wedding where everybody has their fucking phone out. You can look at me. I probably spent a shit ton of money on what's happening here.
When so, people like, hire their photographers anyways. It's
exactly.
Not like
exactly. I'm not spending money. Like, no offense, like, but your iPhone photo is like not, and I don't care. Just I feel like we've lost complete sight of what
matters.
Yeah. And it goes back to the point I was trying to make and then like lost track. But the one thing that I think the swing of the pendulum that has gone wrong is that back, I say in the olden days, sounds like it's like, you know, worth like witchcraft or something. In the last century or so, you know, people married and the expectation was, okay, well, we have roles, right? Like, and of course, I'm sure lots of people were in love. Like I was saying, grandparents and stuff, but like, this is your husband, this is your wife. They have, that's their role in your life. And then you have your friends, and then you have your kids, and you have, you know, whatever else. And now the expectation is, I need to find somebody who is my best friend, who's also my boyfriend, who's also can take all my emotional baggage, and they have to be my everything. Like, I don't need anybody else. I just need my partner. And it's so unhealthy. And I've been there too, and I'm guilty of it. But this article was really interesting because it was just pointing out how we put so much pressure on, and I think that this doesn't just happen in partnerships, like romantic. I've done this with friends too, like, and I've been on the receiving end, having to be someone's complete emotional support or complete everything, and it's absolutely exhausting and it's not sustainable.
And if you're putting your whole well-being and happiness in one person, good luck, because this is the thing, is like, I talk to clients about this, and not to be morbid, but like, we don't know what tomorrow holds. Like, your partner could pass away. You could get hit by a car. Like, they could have a bad day. They could be on a work trip. Right. And like, if your whole identity and sense of self and just happiness is hinging on this person and the relationship, you're screwed. And I say that in the nicest way, because I want people to find wholeness in themselves, and that the relationship adds to your life and doesn't consume your life or become your whole world. And I think you're right. I think it has to do with probably all the Disney movies, like just this culture we have in our music, in media, where we're creating this picture of this is what it's meant to be. Like you've mentioned this before, Taylor Swift, the Swifties, her music is very like codependent, and like, the ideology is like, you know, you're my everything, and like, I found you and you're my other half, and like, now we're fine. And that's not really that great for like, doesn't sustain over time.
No, or like the sad boy music, like The Weeknd. I love his shit, but like, he reminds me of like the thought processes that I had when I was using like like A Moth to a Flame. Like, it's on, I think it's either on his newest album or on his album from Blinding Lights, but it's like, I know basically the lyrics are like, I know that I could have you, but like, this guy could treat you better, so like, I'm gonna let you go, but like, does he know you call me when he sleeps, or does he know the pictures that you keep and all this stuff, like, does he know where your love truly lies? Like, bitch, you're not really letting her go then, like. But we do that, right? Like, and then it's romanticizing these songs. And I think we feel validated because you're like, oh, there's a song about it. So somebody else feels this way too. So it's okay. Or, you know, not even healthy, but you just feel valid in feeling that way. And then you continue on with the toxicity because you're like, okay, well, you know, all the songs on the radio are about like, you know, I shouldn't be with you, but I love you. And
I'm always going to be tied to you for the rest of my
life. Yeah. We're the worst for each other, but you know, I keep coming back for more, you know, just no. Like
I remember when Sarah Bareilles' song Love Song came out, when it's like, I'm not going to write you a love song. It was about her, actually, I think the record label, because yeah, they wanted to write the letter. Right. But like, I really appreciated that. It was like, thank you. Like this, like, let's speak to this culture of like you have to have these over the top romantic love songs. And that's the epitome of like relationships, is it has to be this very like enmeshed thing. And absolutely. Yeah. Love her, by the way. She's great.
Yeah, no, and there's so many amazing artists, and I know that they have to, you know, do what sells, but yeah. I think you also have to think as an artist of any kind, like, well, what are you perpetuating? Yeah. Like, whether you're an actor or a singer or, you know, whatever medium you use, because it imprints, and it kind of goes back to like what I was saying on Beth's podcast, Sober Stories, like kind of a little off the hinge, but like for me with my drinking and stuff, I was super influenced by things that I was watching and listening to, you know, mm-hmm. in high school. Like my favorite show was like Bad Girls Club, like Red fucking Flag, right? And like Mob Wives and all this stuff where like violence is cool and being bad is cool. And like, you literally like get, if you are the baddest bitch, whatever, in your state, then you yeah. get to go on the show. So I'm like, you know, yeah. of course now they're like making a show for like, okay, we're reforming the bad girls. Like, no, we're Bad Girls Club. That's toxic. But it's like, oh, well, thanks. That's great to know now. But like, I thought it was super cool to like fight people and, you know, get wasted and whatever. And I thought it was completely okay because here's the show that's yeah. promoting it.
Yeah. No, it's all media. And we're like, it's, and I remember watching Real World, like Hawaii, when I was like I must have been 9 or 10. And there's someone who was having like, who was essentially like, oh, like having like, she, what's it called? Oh my God. Not overdose from alcohol. What is it? She was having
alcohol poisoning.
Like
I just want to point out really fast, because I think this is something interesting. We call it alcohol poisoning here in the States.
Yeah.
In other countries, they call it alcohol overdose, because that is what it is. But notice yeah. how the language changes, because when we say alcohol poisoning, it sounds like, oh, food poisoning, whatever. I'm just going to get sick. I'm throwing up. But like, it's, you are literally overdosing.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's just, it's so amazing how that just change of language makes it sound yeah. so much less
like a
harmful than what it actually is.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because I was like, I knew it wasn't a drug. So remember, she's literally, it's this, Ruthie's in the hot tub, for anyone who remembers this, and she's literally nodding out, like completely blacked out. Mm-hmm. And they had to like, I remember have like medics come in and take her out of this hot tub. Like, and like, it was just like, weirdly, I was like 10 watching this, and like, obviously I didn't really know what was going on, but like, it was, but they're normalizing it. And then she comes back on the show. Like, it just, it was, I think, you know, she has a problem. And I mean, I'm sure MTV actually probably, to their defense, like, I think it's good to show that this person was like, they didn't show them just partying and like everything was fine. They show you the good and the bad. But I also was like, this is what, I don't remember really anything aside from like, then she comes back and like,
oh, like, we're fine. I'm fine.
Yeah. Right. Like, she just had this bad night. Like, it was, you know, so anyways, we were exposed to a lot of media that, and continue to be exposed to media that impacts how we view relationships, alcohol, substances, partying, friendships.
Ourselves. That's like another huge one too. It's like, you really have to, I think, like, I know I have to be honest with myself and really, because I love all that shit. I love the reality show. I mean, who doesn't like love a good, like, shitty reality show? But yeah. I've specifically had to cut myself off and not watch certain shows anymore or listen to certain music anymore, or, you know, with, when it comes to social media, right? Like, I used to have like an influencer account, and I had to disable it and just start over and make more of a personal account, because I was like, this is so shit for my mental health. Mm-hmm. And really all this has become at this point in my life is a validation platform. Like, I'm not posting for me. I'm not posting, you know, unless, yes, of course, sometimes there were like collaborative, you know, things where I was making money, but the rest of it was like, I'm lonely and I need validation from an outside source. So here's my dopamine hit, bam. And then opposite, right? You don't get enough likes, you don't get enough saves, shares, engagement, and then you feel like shit. And then, you know, it's this whole cycle.
Other people getting more engagement.
Exactly. Well, what am I doing wrong? Do I need to show more skin? You know, like, and it cycles through and you kind of lose yourself. So like now I have my personal one. It goes back to what we were talking about before, like with intention before, like everything I post now is with intention. It's like, am I posting this because this is how I really feel right now, and this is a message I want to send across? Or am I posting this because, yeah, I'm feeling bad today and I want other people to make me feel better, which even, okay, you know what? We do that once in a while.
Right.
Don't be too hard on yourself. But yeah. If all of a sudden your whole feed is just like over-sexualization, I think this is more for women, but also for men, like completely like, yeah, that wasn't really the point of Instagram. Instagram was supposed to be like a place where you could show your friends what you were up to. And now it's, you know, completely become just an advertisement place, like from somebody who studied consumer psychology, like that's all it is. Like there, Instagram is for you to see shit and to buy shit. That's right. the only thing that the only purpose it serves now. And we're so into it, but I think it's really healthy for anybody. And if you don't already do this, to consider doing it, is taking like social media breaks. Like whether that's a week off, or like sometimes I'll just take a weekend off and unplug. And it can be really hard. And I don't realize that.
I think because I think we've talked about, maybe not, but like you like almost like muscle memory will go to your phone screen to click Instagram. Like it's like, it's insane. And I'm like, I don't even need to be on it. Like I don't have any, what is on there, you know, 15 minutes later than that wasn't on there 15 minutes ago. Like, I don't know. And it's like this kind of compulsive behavior too, which I feel like, but it's all, I mean, it's part of the app. They get you to do that. They know how it works.
Oh yeah. Well, it's kind of sickening because being on the other side of it, and a really good book, and I push this book always, well, The Power of Habit. Mm-hmm. It's similar to Atomic Habits, which is more specifically about like your personal habits. But why I like The Power of Habit is because the writer is actually an economist. So like not somebody you would think would write on the subject, but he talks about, yes, our personal habits, but then he also talks about, you know, coming from the side of like advertising and other things as well. And so it's really just interesting to understand like, why do we do that? Like, you know, and how the gamification of Instagram really is what they call it from, you know, like me working in the app space. It's like our goal, and this is with any app, it doesn't matter how, if it's a healthcare app, it doesn't matter if it's a game app. The goal is to keep you in there longer. The goal is to have you spend money if that's possible and have you come back more. And so you have to remember that. And I think like another thing that I do now, like I will put my phone, and I bought like an extra super long cord. And so when I go to bed, and it's harder now, obviously, while I'm staying with my parents because I have like less space. So I had to kind of shift. But when I was back in Newport, I would plug in my phone over on my vanity. Mm-hmm. And so when I went to bed, I didn't have access. I couldn't roll over and look at my phone. You know, if I wanted to listen to a podcast, I'd pop in my AirPods and go to bed. But you have to specifically and mindfully actually set yourself away from your phone. Maybe that means like I'm going on a walk and like get a fucking old, you know, iPod, if you know what an iPod is. Like, you know, or download, can you download music on your iWatch?
Oh God, I'm the last person to
maybe, you know what I mean? Like, point being is like buy an MP3 player. I don't fucking know, but like go out without your fucking phone. you know, watch a movie with your phone in the other room. Do things that gets you less dependent. It's really dependency, because I mean, I would always challenge my ex. I'd be like, all right, like, we're going to watch this whole movie and you're not going to pick up your phone once. And I make him put his phone down on the coffee table, both of us. And for me, it wasn't so hard because I've been doing these, you know, breaks and stuff longer. And I think working in social media, you get so fucking sick of it and you know how it works. So it's kind of like you get, I've seen the fucking Wizard of Oz. I know what it looks like behind the curtain, but I could see, like how you said, he'd reach and okay, I forgot, you know, like, after 5 minutes, I saw it light up. And it truly is, it can become a major addiction. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if, like, in the DSM-6, that social media addiction. No, I mean, video game addiction is not.
And I think too, I was going to say, another thing I tell my clients to do is that for iPhones, and I know actually like Samsung and like Androids have it too, but you can put like a screen time limit too for certain features as well. So you can, I mean, granted you can like click out of it, but it can help you to become more aware of how often you're on it. So like, you know, okay, like if you set it to 45 minutes for a social media and then they give you that 5 minute warning, you're like, oh shit. Like, and especially what if it's only been like 10 o'clock in the morning? So you've been on it now, like, right, for 45 minutes, you've barely been up for like a couple hours. It's just a good thing to bring awareness to how often you're using something and which apps you're using too. So you can set it specifically. I tell people to do this with dating apps too, because I do a lot of like kind of coaching around that. I'm like, don't set your date, set Hinge, Bumble, whatever, for like only 30 minutes. Like, and if you're messaging someone, like the right person won't be upset if you stop messaging them, or you can exchange numbers, right? Like, I mean, like you just don't have to be on it the whole day. Like, that's going to take over your life. It's going to really impact your mental health and your self-esteem and where you're focusing all your energy. So being more intentional with that and using those features on the phone can be helpful too.
Absolutely. And I think kind of wrapping up and going back to our original topic, which is just kind of standards and dating and boundaries in general, like, you know, the world is changing, but at the end of the day, we're adults. And when you become aware, like, challenge yourself. I think what we're asking is, like, challenge yourself, really take that look, do that exercise that we were talking about. If you're single, or even if you're in a relationship, I think it's healthy to look if you're maybe unhappy in your relationship and really take a look and go, hey, does my partner really, you know, what's going on with this? Because, and once again, we're not saying you need to go, hey, let's get a divorce, because I think people are way too fast to jump on that. But, you know, communicate with that person.
Yeah.
And I think that's super helpful. And then, as usual, we're going to be putting some resources into, along with the original article, The Rise of Lonely Single Men, in the description. So yeah.
This is a fun conversation.
I know.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Generation Dry, a podcast for the sober and sober curious. If you like what you've been listening to, make sure to subscribe and leave us a review. For more information about this episode, you can check out the description. And for more techniques and tips, make sure to follow us on Instagram at Generation Dry Pod. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you guys next week.